All right, we are back, and we're on a special time this morning for Get Up because today on ESPN and the ESPN app, it is the second of three huge UFC events on Fight Island. The prelims will start at 9 Eastern this morning. The main card is at noon, featuring top 10 welterweights Michael Chiesa taking on Neil Magny. So an exciting day here on ESPN, and we're taking you right up to it. Again, a special morning for us today, an hour early on Get Up, coming to you live from above the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17 with you for the next 60 minutes, and we will be busy. Here we go. It is time to Get Up with Mr. Mahomes, waiting and watching with the biggest game of the year 4 days away, and absolutely everything hanging in the balance. We've got the very latest on his status. Plus, last time they met, the Bucks blew them out. Why should we think this will be any different Sunday at snowy Lambeau Field? And I will tell you of one change they absolutely need to make before it costs another team another season. All that and more in this hour of Get Up, which starts right now with the biggest story of the week, the health of Patrick Mahomes. The Kansas City quarterback remains, as we speak, in the NFL's concussion protocol as we await news on whether he'll be able to play Sunday in the AFC Championship against the Bills. And watching all of this for us is our NFL insider, Dan Graziano, who gets up with us this morning here. Dan, what can you tell us? What's the very latest as far as Mahomes' status for Sunday's AFC title game?
Yeah, Greeny, as of last night, everything has been encouraging in terms of Patrick Mahomes' progression through the concussion protocol, but it remains a progression. There are still steps he has to clear, and even once he clears the final step, he needs to be cleared by an independent neurological consultant that's jointly appointed by the NFL and the NFL Players Association. Again, that concussion protocol, as we have been discussing, set up to protect the player from himself, from his team, and effectively take the decision out of their hands. So as he continues to show improvement and clear the steps and not show concussion symptoms, it gets more encouraging in terms of his chances to play Sunday, but we really won't know for sure until he gets through the weekend symptom-free.
And I think it's an important point that you make there, and I want to just underline it again for anyone who doesn't follow this closely and may just think to themselves, well, it's a huge game. Maybe in the regular season he wouldn't play, but in this case, certainly he will. What you're making clear is that's not up to him, and it's not any different than it would be any other week.
The entire premise behind the NFL's concussion protocol is that the long-term health of the player is more important than the result of any particular game, even one like this. So yes, that's why the independent neurological consultant is there, has to sign off on the clearance even after the team physician clears Mahomes or any other player for a return from a concussion.
All right, that's an incredibly important point to make. And look, for those who might be thinking to themselves, every player desperately wants to play in a game like this. Of course they do. But then you have the former players who sometimes will sound a word of caution. And among them yesterday was one of the great legends in the history of the sport. Brett Favre was asked his thoughts on Patrick Mahomes playing this weekend. Here's what he said.
I played 321 straight games. It kind of goes against everything that I stood for when I played. But you got to be smart. I was never faced with a decision that he potentially will face this week. And ultimately, the decision may fall on the doctors. And if they choose that he doesn't play, then it's the right move because of long-term damage. And when you're in the moment and you're young, you're bulletproof, man. But I'm 51 years old, and I wonder what tomorrow will bring. Because of concussions more than anything.
It's fascinating perspective from a legend there, and it seems to go so contrary to everything that we generally have always associated with football players. But Dominique Foxworth, you were the president of the NFL Players Association when all of these rules, the independent neurologist and everything else, went in. Do you believe there has been a real shift in the way players approach this, the issue of concussions and playing in games like this?
Well, I think there's a much higher level of awareness, and I'm not in the locker room and I'm not a player right now, so I can't speak for them necessarily, but it's hard for me to imagine a situation where a guy gets cleared to play in the game and then chooses not to play, because that's kind of what Brett was saying, is that it's up to him, which he's right. The neurologist can clear you, but we still don't have complete information on how these brain injuries actually impact him. So he could get cleared and still decide not to play. That's not something that I could ever imagine happening. And when we look at scenes like this, it's sometimes something that you think should happen, But I can't imagine that players go into this game, especially a championship week game, and think, even give it a second thought, that they may not go out there no matter what type of injury they're suffering from, what type of pain or fear that they might have. When you become a football player, you kind of give away so much of that, so much of the discretion that a normal person might have in that situation. You're thinking about your guys and your teammates, and you're thinking about this opportunity and how rare they are, which we talked about before. And I know D. Wood knows that. I'm sure he's been in those situations with brain injuries and other injuries to his body.
So, D. Wood, let me then sort of shift it to a different subject here. And it's quite simply this, with no disrespect to Chad Henne, who's been a backup in the NFL a long time and made two huge plays to seal a win for Kansas City last week. Is it as simple as, if Mahomes plays, the Chiefs are the favorite and have an excellent chance to win? If he doesn't, Buffalo becomes an overwhelming favorite without maybe the best player in the sport on the field. Do you see it that way?
Greeny, I do see it that way, and that's no disrespect to Chad Henne or any other guys. But listen, you're talking about, you know, if Mahomes is not out there, you're going up against one of the hottest quarterbacks in the league in Josh Allen. Just a tremendous blend of athleticism, his accuracy, his command of the offense, and just the overall play calling that's been paired with Josh Allen. And if Patrick Mahomes is not out there, even with, you know, Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill and all the weapons that the Chiefs had to have at their disposal, Chad Henne is nowhere near in the same area code as Patrick Mahomes. So if Mahomes is not out there, yeah, Buffalo won the Super Bowl.
Chad Henne is fun. Chad Henne is fun, but as the saying goes, anything is possible with him out there, which includes throwing arm punts into the back of the end zone. That's something that is not possible with Patrick Mahomes. The low-end game is something that Patrick Mahomes just doesn't really ever have, especially in these big moments. We've never really seen him have a bad game in the playoffs. Chad Henne, yes, anything is possible. He could convert a fourth and one, but he can also throw it up for grabs in the end zone to other teams. So it certainly changed the dynamic, and I think the Bills obviously become the favorite in that situation.
Maybe the easiest way I can put this is that Patrick Mahomes has basically been a starting quarterback in the NFL now for 3 years. He's been the league MVP. He's won a Super Bowl, and he's lost a combined total of nine games in 3 years as the quarterback. And Graziano, let's button it up with the timetable here, because I think it's important for fans to note that this is not something we will know with certainty until we get very close to the actual game itself.
Right. So if he's cleared for football activity, he could do something like throw on a side field away from his teammates. If he's cleared for everything, for contact, then he can practice with the team as he normally would. But quarterbacks don't subject themselves to contact in practice. So clearing him for contact would effectively be clearing him for the game. If at any point he shows a recurrence of concussion symptoms, if he wakes up Sunday morning with a headache or something that indicates to him he has a concussion, and he reports that to the team, they have to put him back at the beginning of the concussion protocol, and he would have to miss that game.
That is the part where it gets very interesting, to the point that Neek was making a little earlier. All right, let's go on the clock. We got a couple of other things we want to cover here. And Graziano, I'm going to start with you. Put 30 seconds on the clock. You have a note about the NFL head coaching hiring cycle. This is getting a lot of attention, of course. Dan Graziano, what is it you can share?
Yeah, the Fritz Pollard Alliance put out a statement yesterday expressing concern and disappointment over the lack of black coaches who have been hired in this cycle. We've seen five head coaches hired, four white men, one Robert Saleh of Lebanese descent. In a league that is 70% black in terms of its player population, the NFL was hoping this year would be different. They took steps this offseason to change the rules, to reward teams for developing minority coaches that got hired elsewhere. They're facing another offseason of questions about this. Two black GMs hired, obviously very encouraging, but they wanted to see more progress than they've seen so far this cycle, with two jobs still open.
Yes, and Eric Bieniemy in the mix, perhaps for one of them or both of them, but we'll wait and see what winds up happening. It's a point I'm glad that we brought out there. All right, now we'll put the time on the clock. That was a good decision not to do that there. But D. Wood, let's come to you. 30 seconds for this one. Who will be the New Orleans Saints starting quarterback week one of next season? D. Wood, go.
Greeny, I'm going with Jameis Winston. And I just feel like Jameis Winston going to the New Orleans Saints, being under the tutelage of head coach Sean Payton. I think that's been wonders. I think it did wonders for his game. Just being able to sit back and watch Drew Brees, watch how he goes about his business day in and day out. And let's be honest here. Jameis Winston is the better is a better passer of the football, more talented passer of the football than Taysom Hill. Regardless of Taysom Hill being the Swiss Army knife, I want a young guy that I can develop and look forward to in the future.
Yeah, Jameis came in, threw the one pass, threw a touchdown the other day, so all that seemed to go just fine. Dominique, one more for you here. The Ravens wide receiver Hollywood Brown expressed disappointment the other day about the team's passing game. Give me one name the Ravens should be targeting this offseason to change that. 30 seconds, go.
Oh, I'm here to have some fun. What about Odell Beckham Jr.? It seems clear that the Cleveland Browns do not need and necessarily want to have him. And obviously, they don't necessarily want to trade within the division, but I think it's going to be hard to find someone who is willing to compensate them for what they think they deserve for Odell Beckham. But I think what Stephon Diggs was able to do for Josh Allen and turning Josh Allen into an MVP caliber quarterback, I think people could start to believe that Odell Beckham could do the same thing. And Baltimore is the place that needs a receiver more than anyone else.
That would be fascinating. There'll be good free agents out there like Allen Robinson and Kenny Galladay, but OBJ to Baltimore, sign me up right now. We'll take a break as we continue. One man can make a difference. How the relationship between Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs has led the Bills to where they are in the AFC Championship game. Plus, Brady and the Bucs are peaking at the right time, but will their progress be frozen by the tundra of Lambeau Field? Answers to those questions and more as we get up with you on ESPN.
Dell Tech Fest starts now. To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Unleash more possibilities with cutting-edge systems, their most advanced features, and great prices. Plus, curate your dream setup with deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to state-of-the-art technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Anniversary savings await you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals. Come on, get up.
Back on Get Up, we open the hour with the AFC Championship game. Let's dive into the NFC game. The Bucs and the Packers, these are two teams who met earlier this season. It was week six, and Tampa dominated. It was 38-10, and it was a comprehensive win in every conceivable way. The Packers just 10 points, fewest they scored in a game this season. Aaron Rodgers has only thrown 5 picks in 18 games. He threw 2 of them that day. Meanwhile, Ronald Jones had himself a career night for Tampa Bay. Earlier, we had our Bucs reporter Jenna Lane live here on Get Up, giving us insight into what lessons Tampa took away from that win.
There really is a formula there for success for the Bucs against the Packers. You go back to week six, Devin White had an unbelievable game there. Levante David, Todd Bowles really unleashed both those players. The speed of those guys on the outside made it so difficult for Jamal Williams and also Aaron Jones. They had a very hard time getting anything going on the ground, and then they pressured Aaron Rodgers throughout the game. It was a ton of pressure in his face early and often.
All right, so that was Jenna Lane. This is Dominique Foxworth all the way to the corner of our screen. And let me ask you the question this way. These teams played each other. It was 38-10 Tampa, and they look much better now than they did then. So why should I expect this weekend to be so different?
Yeah, I think that game got out of hand because Aaron Rodgers did some uncharacteristic things. Like, they were up 10-0 at the end of the first quarter, and then Aaron Rodgers threw a pick six. Then on the following drive, he threw another interception that went out at about the 2-yard line, and then they ran it in after that. From that point forward, the game got out of hand, and they were just kind of chasing and trying to kind of abandon the running game and just trying to make big plays after big plays. I think that they learned from that situation, and it's unlikely that you ever have another game where Aaron Rodgers throws 2 interceptions in one game. Like, those are full season numbers for Aaron Rodgers. 2, 3, 4 interceptions. That's what he does. He's not going to throw 2 picks in a playoff game after seeing all their pressures back then and understanding how to pick them up and how to react.
Well, I mean, it's the right point. Again, that he threw 40% of his interceptions for the season in that game, and that includes the playoffs. But you made the point earlier that part of the reason is that Todd Bowles, the outstanding defensive coordinator for the Buccaneers, kind of fooled Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
So should we expect them to have a different game plan defensively to go out and try for him again.
Yeah, I think that he will have some success. I don't see Aaron Rodgers just dominating altogether, but I see him making better decisions. I think some of those coverages were coverages that he may not have been able to anticipate. He'll anticipate them now. The zone blitzes are a challenging thing for all quarterbacks. I think the roughest thing when I rewatched that game yesterday was that Aaron Rodgers was throwing the ball hot when he had the blitzes and pressures picked up. He was throwing them off his back foot and kind of scared, tossing the ball as if he didn't have protection. I think he'll do a better job this time setting the line and understanding when he has to get rid of the ball quickly and understanding that on 3rd and 10, sometimes you're just going to have to punt it away. That first pick six was a 3rd and 10 where he was getting pressured, and rather than throwing it away, he still tried to make the play off his back foot, would ended up being a touchdown going the other way. Aaron Rodgers is generally pretty risk averse, and I think he stays that way in this game.
For sure. And then obviously there's the other side of the ball where it's going to be very interesting to watch, because you've got Aaron Rodgers and that running attack. They got three different guys running the ball effectively, Damian Woody, against the Buccaneers, who don't give up anything on the ground. So how do you see that matchup?
I think it's going to be more of the same. I think this Bucs defense, you know, particularly against the run, they are very good. Not only good up front, but they have so much speed at the linebacker position. They might have the best duo, you know, pair of linebackers in the National Football League, and Devin White and Levante David. So that speed will be able to match up with what the Packers want to do as far as their running backs concerned. And they don't want to get into a game where it's not balanced, because again, that's going to play right into what Todd Bowles wants to do. That tape that Dominique showed in the first hour, Todd Bowles wants to, you know, dial those type of pressures up, all those exotic zone blitz schemes. When you don't have balance, guess what? All of that is going to get unleashed again.
Graziano, you covered the Packers game last weekend. What did you hear from them?
Yeah, look, the run game is different than it was in the middle of the season. I remember talking to Matt LaFleur, their head coach, around the time of their last loss, which was to Indianapolis in Week 11. And he was, to put it mildly, unhappy with the state of his running game. But I talked to him last week, and he said things have gotten better. We've just changed things up. There's more variety, so we don't always look the same. And he feels good about it. They've averaged 164 rushing yards a game over their last 7 games, all of which they have won. So they're in a better place confidence-wise in the terms of their offense overall. I'll say a couple things. One, the Buccaneers could get defensive tackle Vita Vea back for this game, and that could be a huge thing against the run in terms of their run defense and ability to stop the Packers' ground game. But basically, Tampa Bay's won 2 games this year against teams that finish with winning records. In one of those, Aaron Rodgers threw 2 interceptions. In the other, Drew Brees threw 3 interceptions. If that happens on Sunday, I think the Buccaneers go to the Super Bowl. If it doesn't, I think they're going to have a hard time.
All right, something to keep an eye on there. We'll look forward to these. Really a dream Final Four for the NFL. We'll take a short break. Much more football as we continue. 2 of the NFL's top offenses going head-to-head in the AFC. Will the Chiefs return to the Super Bowl, or will Buffalo beat the champs at their own game? We'll answer that question, and then we'll see if Graziano can answer this one from Sneaky Hembo. After Tom Brady, which active player has started the next most conference championship games? Active player. That's the question. The answer's next. Okay. He knows it. You just know he knows it. Be right back.
Delicious, meet nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
All right, we're back. And Graziano, quick Sneaky Hembo. After Tom Brady, which active player has started the next most conference championship games?
He wants me to say Aaron Rodgers because it's going to be his 5th, but I don't think it's that. I think I'm going to go with the guy that won it for me yesterday. I'm going to say Rob Gronkowski is the answer 2 days in a row.
Oh, yeah, the right team, but the wrong guy. The answer is Devin McCourty with 8 for the Patriots.
Right.
And so rack one up for Hembo. They are now all even this calendar year at 4 wins apiece. Coming up, the Buccaneers use the regular season to find rhythm on their offense. Will the addition of Antonio Brown be the piece that brings them a championship? We'll answer that question next. Get up on ESPN.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Back on Get Up, talking about the AFC Championship game. Chiefs and Bills. It's a rematch of a Week 6 game, and Kansas City won that one. They had a 15-minute time of possession advantage. That was their second highest in a game this season. That's because they ran the ball for 245 yards, a lot of it coming from Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Patrick Mahomes was 21 of 26 for 225 yards and two scores in what was his most efficient passing game of the season. On the other side, Josh Allen had a rough day, just 122 yards, his lowest number this year on barely over 50% passing to go along with a pick and just a single touchdown. So that was a very bad night. Now, the Bills have been outstanding ever since that game. And, D. Wood, I know you put together a tape to give us an area of growth for Josh Allen since these teams went head-to-head. Let's take a look at it.
Yeah, Greeny, you touched upon Josh Allen, and one of the things that he's really improved upon this year has been his accuracy. And if you look right here, this is a game that was in inclement weather, but Josh Allen, this is a play, you know, here it is right here with Stephon Diggs. That's a touchdown any other game. And you can see the inaccuracy on that pass. That's not the Josh Allen that we've been seeing all season. Fast forward to the wild card round. Look at the accuracy on this play to Stephon Diggs again, throwing in a tight window, perfect pass to Stephon Diggs. That's where Josh Allen has really been outstanding throughout this whole year. And that one game, it just didn't show what Josh Allen had been doing all season. So I don't expect him to have any type of game similar to what he had against that Week 6 game against the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, our friend Ryan Clark refers to it as his arm arrogance. That's how good he's been throwing the football. But Dominique, he's also a guy, and certainly when he came into the league, everyone talked about his ability to run with the ball. And while we haven't seen as much of that, could be a big factor on Sunday.
I expect it to be. I hope they do. They had a few design runs in that game against the Chiefs that worked out quite well. But not only that, what he's done in the playoffs, though Brian Daboll is getting a lot of credit for scheming some things up, what he's done in the playoffs when it comes to buying time in the pocket and then connecting downfield to guys, that's been really impressive. His accuracy throughout that, while on the run to his right, hitting the right spot on the sideline to make sure those things are completed. Like, that's what's been more impressive than anything. And everyone kind of knows what you're going to go to. They're going to take away some of your key plays. And the athleticism of Josh Allen and his accuracy while on the run, I think that's going to be a difference maker if they're going to be able to move the ball and make big plays against this Chiefs defense.
Now, Graziano, the first week of December, Mr. Hembo and I put together an essay in which we talked about how the Bills have the best formula to beat Kansas City. Now, that doesn't take into account whether Mahomes plays this weekend or not, but the formula they have feels like the right one to beat the Chiefs. I know you pick up on that thought.
Yeah, the two prongs of that, if I recall, were that they can match the Chiefs in terms of explosive plays and that they can sustain long touchdown drives. It's not about winning time of possession. It's about, you know, keeping the Chiefs offense on the sideline and scoring touchdowns at the end of that drive. The Bills have the ability to do that. Look, you know, that game, the first game against the Chiefs, Greeny, was in the middle of a stretch where the Bills' offense wasn't going great. They had 16, 17, 18 points 3 weeks in a row. Remember, the next week they beat the Jets with only field goals. So I talked to Josh Allen a couple weeks later when things were going better, and he said defenses had adjusted the way they were playing him, play a little bit deeper zones, and it took him a while to readjust to that. But obviously, given the way they've scored points ever since, it looks like he has. And much like we were discussing with the Packers a few minutes ago, I think the Bills' confidence as an offense is in a lot different place than it was in Week 6.
For good reason, but Dominique, I will bring this up. One of the key factors always in long time of possession, ball control kind of drives is running the football, and the Bills didn't do it at all. They didn't even really try to do it against the Ravens last weekend. Can they get away with that Sunday?
That was my point at the beginning. They didn't have Moss. They had him, and they only had one running back. But you know what? You got another running back, and his name is Josh Allen. He's just as big and just as strong as the other running backs that you have, if not bigger and stronger. So I know that you want to keep your players safe, and after seeing Patrick Mahomes get hurt on a speed option last week, maybe some people would be a bit sheepish about running their quarterback. But you know what? This is the championship round, and Josh Allen needs to run the ball because that makes their offense a lot more dynamic and impossible to stop because he has the arm strength and accuracy all of a sudden to attack downfield, and he can run just about as good as anyone in the league, not named Lamar Jackson.
Isn't it ironic and frankly an outstanding illustration of how well they've developed the young quarterback, that the questions about him when he came in were, can he throw the ball? And now the question we're asking is, will he run the ball on Sunday in the biggest game of his life? We will see. It should be fascinating. We have much more football as we go. But a reminder, this week, it's all about the fights.
Dennis Siever didn't seem to be drinking the Conor McGregor Kool-Aid. Wow!
Nice clean left hand by Conor. There's another straight left, dropped his mouthpiece. It's almost like Dennis Siever has no business being in there with him.
Tagged that's what McGregor Conor left hand.
That's it.
It's all over! Conor McGregor stops Dennis Siever.
The Notorious!
He is back. Don't miss the next chapter in the career of the notorious Conor McGregor. It's UFC 257, Poirier versus McGregor 2, live from Fight Island. It's Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern on UFC pay-per-view. That's exclusively on ESPN+. And DraftKings is the official daily fantasy sports partner of UFC. This Saturday, new players can play free for $100,000 in prizes when they make their first deposit. Download the DraftKings app and sign up with promo code Octagon for your chance to win. And let us go there live. Brett Okamoto is standing by live at UFC's Fight Island in Abu Dhabi as we have a special event in UFC coming up today, just the top of the hour here on ESPN. But Brett, quickly off the top, what can you tell us about the security and the atmosphere there, on Fight Island? I'm concerned that Brett does not hear me. Again, he is on the other side of the world, and it is very loud where he is. We're having a little issue with our communication with Brett. We will do our best to try and reestablish that for you momentarily. And now I'm told he can't hear me. So, Brett, let me come back to you here. Our apologies. What can you tell us about the security and the atmosphere there?
Oh, the atmosphere is, it's different. I think fans are happy to be back. I mean, I see a guy right over there. He's got a full pizza sitting on his lap and a glass of beer. I mean, it looks like he's enjoying being back at a live sports event. Now, it's not going to be a full crowd. This is very low capacity, only 2,000 people here. But I can tell you, I was at this arena last weekend when Max Holloway gave one of the best performances I've ever seen live. And there was noise, and it felt good to have noise. You know, after months and months and months of seeing these fights in empty arenas, it felt great to have noise here at Etihad.
Sitting there with a full pizza in his lap, she pretty much describes every member of our staff watching sports on the weekends, but that's neither here nor there. All right, let's talk about Conor McGregor. It has been a year since we've seen him in the octagon. How do you think he is approaching this week, both mentally and physically?
I think he's laser focused. You know, it had been a long time since we had seen him when he came back last year in 2020, and we were sort of asking those questions. Well, how's Conor going to look? And he went and knocked out Donald Cowboy Cerrone in 40 seconds. You know, I talk to fighters and trainers all the time. Do you believe in ring rust? Do you not believe in ring rust? Some of them do, some of them don't. And I think it's different for each fighter. Conor McGregor has had a special ability to never really have ring rust. And I think a big reason for that is when he is committed, when he is in the gym, he knows how to push himself. Even with all the millions of dollars he's made, he knows how to prepare for a fight. And then right here, he's just iron, man. I mean, he's just so confident. He's dialed in. And I think that he has a little bit of an advantage here because he's fighting an opponent in Dustin Poirier who he knows, I knocked this guy out in less than 2 minutes 6 years ago. I think that's given him confidence.
He dominated that matchup. But I had Dana White here earlier this week, Brett, and he was telling me all the different ways in which Poirier is a completely different fighter than he was then. You sat down with him yesterday. What did he tell you? I hope we didn't just lose Brett again.
Yeah, I lost him again.
I think we may have just lost him again. we'll just get up and go here again. The fight is Saturday night. It is an enormous event. We also have a UFC event coming your way live here on ESPN at the top of this hour. So plenty of UFC action coming up. There it is. That's why we went on a special time today. It's streaming on ESPN Plus, and it's here, the prelims starting 9 a.m. Eastern today on ESPN. All right, let's get up and go. Some of the other sports news of the day. George Springer and the Blue Jays have agreed to a six-year, $150 million contract. According to our Jeff Passan, the contract would be the largest given out by the Blue Jays in their franchise history. In other very significant golf news, Tiger Woods has undergone a microdiscectomy to alleviate nerve pain in his lower back and will not compete in next week's Farmer Insurance Open or the Genesis Invitational next month. How far along he is in his recovery will determine when he can return. Of course, all eyes are on Augusta. The UConn's Gino Auriemma got his 1,099th career victory as the Huskies beat Butler yesterday 103-35. It moved him past the late Tennessee coach Pat Summitt and into second place for the most wins in Division I women's basketball. And finally, Purdue took on number 15 Ohio State last night. Game went right down to the wire. 10 seconds left. Chance to win it. Freshman Jaden Ivey knocked down a go-ahead three, and Purdue upset Ohio State. Afterwards, an emotional Ivey had this to say.
I've been in a slump. You know, I'm just trying to gather myself because I know I want this game so bad, and I've been struggling, you know, mentally. Just trying to gather myself. And I know I want to win, and I want to win so bad. And just to see that shot go in, it just means everything.
Ah, the emotion, and what a win. Meanwhile, as we continue, the call on this play may have changed who wins the Super Bowl this season. If that's a problem, I've got the solution. Next.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code PARLAY and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code PARLAY. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Don't miss Thursday's edition of my new show on ESPN Plus, Stephen A's World. We'll have exclusive interviews with UFC icon Conor McGregor before his main event this weekend and acting and comedic superstar Chris Rock. That's Stephen A's World, exclusively on ESPN Plus.
We are just rolling along here. Get up on ESPN. Welcome you back to our studio with you commercial free for the next 14 minutes. Came on a special time today, and that is because at the top of the hour, we are heading to UFC's Fight Island on ESPN and on the ESPN app. 9 a.m. Eastern, we lead it up to the main event featuring top 10 welterweights Michael Chiesa and Neil Magny. But we're commercial free here on Get Up until then, and we have significant breaking news. Just into our newsroom moments ago, Philip Rivers has announced that he is retiring from the National Football League after 17 sensational seasons as a quarterback, 16 of them, of course, in San Diego or then Los Angeles with the Chargers, and then played this last year with Indianapolis. I just jotted down a few quick numbers here. He started the last 240 games of his career. That's the second longest streak by an NFL quarterback ever, behind only, of course, Brett Favre. He's 39 years old. He finishes fifth all-time in yards passing and fifth all-time in touchdown passes. He has a standing offer to go become a prep school coach. He's going to go coach high school football in Alabama. It's what he's wanted to do, and he is now going to go do it. So, again, Philip Rivers, after 17 seasons, announcing his retirement. Dominique, you would have gone up against him directly. Yes, what can you tell us about playing against Philip Rivers?
Yeah, I played against him all the way back in college when he was at NC State, and he had that unorthodox, unusual throwing motion, but somehow it was always effective, and it was really nice to see his career end on a somewhat positive note. I know they lost, but he played well in that game throughout much of the season where he was up and down. So Phillip Rivers is obviously going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, even though he's never gotten to that Super Bowl, never won a Super Bowl, or never even played in a Super Bowl. But throughout all this time, he's been one of the best quarterbacks in the league and had a tremendous career. So it's going to be incredibly interesting if someone has a camera on him while he's coaching high school football, because he is an animated guy who doesn't curse, so you don't have to worry about that. But he is an animated, intense competitor, and it's going to be funny watching him trying to influence a game when he has no other influence after the opening kickoff.
He will always be remembered, I think, in a number of ways. One of them as a member of the legendary 2004 quarterback class. Yes, he was the second quarterback taken in that class, actually drafted by the Giants and then traded on the day of the draft for Eli Manning. But Eli was in that draft and Ben Roethlisberger in that draft. Now Ben, the only one left. D. Wood, what would you say about Phillip Rivers as a player?
Oh, man. I have so much. I always respected Phillip Rivers from afar, just the energy. One of the toughest competitors that we've seen come into the National Football League at the quarterback position. He's all, you know, like Dominique said, was always animated. And, you know, this was a guy that, you know, he would throw an interception and he would just keep slinging it. No question. He wouldn't back down from anyone. And he's had a tremendous career over, you know, playing with the San Diego Chargers and ultimately ending with the Indianapolis Colts. And like I said, I respect his career so much, man, because of the energy he brought to the field each and every game. So I tip my hat to Phillip Rivers, tremendous career.
Yeah, and if the most important ability in football is availability, again, he started the last 240 games of his career.
He played on a torn ACL, didn't he? At one point,
He played in the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. He played in the AFC Championship game 6 days after tearing his ACL. Played and lost to New England in that game. I was just reading the story about that, actually, as I was going through as many notes as I could during our break as we got the news here. But that was the only AFC Championship game that he got to during his career. And again, played 6 days after tearing his ACL and ultimately lost that game to the Patriots. Graziano, I hate to even take the subject away from him directly, but his retirement in Indianapolis does open an interesting door for a really good team with a lot of really good players that now needs a quarterback. And people will start looking to Carson Wentz in Philadelphia because of the history of the relationship with the coach Frank Reich, now the head coach in Indianapolis, who was his guy in Philly when he was at his best. What do you expect the Colts to do?
Yeah, look, they'll cast a wide net. They were in the same position last year, right? A ready-made team, a good playoff-caliber team needing a quarterback, and they're going to be that again. There was a Rivers-Frank Reich connection from Reich's time in San Diego, so that made sense. People will make the Wentz connection. The Eagles at this point aren't interested in moving Wentz. We'll see what develops as the offseason goes along. But there will be options. There'll be interesting options on the quarterback market. We've talked about the possibility of guys like Jimmy Garoppolo being available, Matthew Stafford being available. You know, the Colts will have options. But Green, do you mind? I have some memories of Phillip Rivers personally. I think this was as a reporter. This was a man who was consistently generous with his time and insight. And I know I always appreciated that. And I know a lot of colleagues of mine have said the same thing. Just an incredibly genuine individual who felt things deeply. Like I'm sure he still does. When I'm talking about as a football player, it meant a lot to him. And I know it tears him up that he didn't win a Super Bowl. But, you know, the feeling that he always had for his teammates, for his team, for the effort he would put in to be great. When you talk to Phillip Rivers, you have to block out some time. He's an effusive individual who has a lot to say and cares about the people around him. And I think, you know, he's a guy that will be missed by a lot of people in a lot of levels of football.
Go ahead, Nate.
Well, as a player, I understand all that effusive praise you have for him being so generous to the reporters. But as a player, good riddance. Like, the man was very was far too good and also far too arrogant, and he would talk trash in your face after he threw a touchdown. So I have a ton of respect for him, and that's part of the respect that I have for him is, as a defender, not sad to see him go. The man was an excellent football player and also a hell of a trash talker. So very annoying with his dadgummits and gosh daggets. Like, just say what you want to say. Say the word that you want to say.
Yeah, he didn't say the words.
We did a feature on him. We did a feature on him a couple years ago. It's run a few times on our network about the trash-talking quarterback who doesn't swear and what does he say instead. And there's all this great footage of him, like, you know, cursing guys out without cursing, right? Where he's just getting in guys' faces and talking about it. So, yeah, he leaves that legacy as well as the all-time trash-talking quarterback.
I would say it's a Stone Cold Lead Pipe Lop. You're going to hear a lot of that today as we continue our coverage of this on ESPN. Right. And I think when we think back to when they lost that playoff game and we saw him get very emotional afterwards, that was the first time I got a sense he knows it's over. He knows that was his last game. You sort of had a feeling then as he was crying, tearing up after it, that he knew he waited a week or two, and now here it is. So again, Phillip Rivers, Hall of Fame career, 17 seasons. He announces today that he is going to retire. Meanwhile, next order of business. With the conference championship games this week, I want to look back at something that happened 2 years ago today. One of the most infamous calls or non-calls in history of any sport. 2018 NFC Championship game, Saints and Rams. We all know it. You don't need me to tell you what happened. You don't need me to tell you what it meant. Basically, if that ridiculously obvious pass interference is called, the New Orleans Saints wind up in the Super Bowl. It wasn't, and as a result, the Rams had a chance to win, and they did. So history completely rewritten. And then I thought of this again a week ago, when another non-reviewable play, in this case, a clear helmet leading with the helmet penalty on Daniel Sorensen on Rashard Higgins, resulted in a game-altering fumble that went a long way towards deciding the Browns and the Chiefs game this past weekend. I don't know for certain, and no one does, what the outcome would have been, but we do know that that was a call that could have been overturned very easily and quickly with the use of instant replay. So we do a feature every now and again called Change My Mind, and I will ask if anyone wants to change my mind when I simply say all plays in a football game should be reviewable. It doesn't make any sense to me. The idea of replay is to fix the massive error, the obvious error. That sometimes we are trying to move the spot of the football 6 inches here or there. They're challenging things that clearly were not what the original intention of the rule was. The intention of the rule is to overturn the badly missed call. So there's no reason in my mind that if a call is evidently badly missed, it shouldn't be allowed to be reviewed regardless of what it is. Dominique, do you want to change my mind?
I'll give it a shot. So, like, I'm with you in spirit. I would love for all the calls to be made right. But we see what happens. We saw what happened when they made pass interference reviewable. They never overturned any of them. I don't imagine that making things reviewable means that the NFL is going to actually overturn these sorts of plays. So I agree with you. I would love to see them get these type of plays right. But I have no reason to believe that if review was out there, that they would have overturned this play. Because when it's close, they just kind of keep the play on the field. And that is something that is close. And frankly, even when it's not close, we saw many pass interference calls for that one season where pass interference was reviewable. We saw many of them go up and we're like, oh yeah, obviously you should fix that. And then they don't fix it. So it just adds to the frustration. It may add some suspense, but it doesn't necessarily improve the game.
Well, just because they didn't get it right last time doesn't mean it isn't a good idea. Damian Woody, what do you think?
I'm a traditionalist, Greeny. I'm not the type of person that I want to be reviewing everything because I worry about the pace of the game. You know, that to me is what I worry about. I want things, there should be some human error. Yes, there's egregious calls that we've seen, you know, throughout every season. There's no question about it. But I don't think one call dictates the outcome of a game. There's always certain plays in a game that lead up to that. And I just feel like once you start getting to the waters of we need to review everything, it just messes up the flow of the game.
So I'm so glad you mentioned that because I can respond to both of those points. One, I wouldn't add any challenges. So the same number of plays per game will be reviewed. So I don't see why that will add any time. And B, there's nothing in the world worse. I've been saying this on the air for 20 years. Nothing in the world worse than the human element. We have used technologies as long as we possibly can to remove the human element from everything. So, why Greeny, in the world is the human element all of a sudden something we want to preserve in sports? Go ahead, Graziano.
Okay, Dan.
Wait. Remove the human element from everything. So when you get rid of it in officiating, how long is it till you want to get rid of it for the players too? I mean, like, a guy shouldn't drop a pass, so why don't we replace him with a freaking robot? Replay review in all sports, not just football, in all sports, is a scourge and an abomination that should be eradicated from the sports landscape immediately. It does far more harm than good. At the base of all this, we are talking about an entertainment product, and you're trying to add more things that are not entertaining, that are not watchable. Like, we see this spectacular sideline catch, and now we gotta zero it in to see if maybe his toe grazed a little piece of grass that has some white on it. That's not sports. And eventually people will turn on sports if more and more of that invades it. And I know the NFL believes that, and that's why they're resistant to expanding replay, which again is a disaster.
I would like Greeny, all of Greeny's. Mr. Gray, hold on 1 second. I would like all of Mr. Graziano's comments stricken from the record. Go ahead, Dominique.
Greeny says that he is in the interesting business, and he's trying to make the game less interesting. And I would quibble with one thing you said. You said there would be no more reviews in the game. There would be more reviews if more calls got overturned. You don't have a limit on the amount of reviews you have. You have a limit on the amount of failed reviews you have. So if you get a review right, then you're going to be incentivized to keep throwing those challenge flags. It will slow down the pace of the game if more things become reviewable. And we get in a situation where we're with Dan Graziano, like, wow, what a catch. And then we're like, oh, let's check it out. Oh, what a play at a goal line. Oh, let's check it out. Oh, my gosh, what a run. Oh, let's check it out. No fun. Scourge.
And then you,
once again,
changing the channel
overlook
is what we're doing there.
Points that I have made correctly in the past, which are that there should be a one-look rule in replay. If you need more than one look at it, then just leave the call. Let it stand on the field. You should only be overturning plays that you take one look at and say, that clearly was pass interference. That guy was clearly out of bounds. They have used the
Greeny is clearly not letting this go.
What? Go ahead, D-Wood.
No, I said, Greeny, you clearly not letting this one go.
I'm not letting it go. Because why would why would a person who was right let it go? Go ahead, D. A final word, Nate.
You often say that you're a genius that won't be appreciated till well after your time. But you know what a real genius would do? A real genius right now would acknowledge that he's wrong. A real smart, confident person, like, hey, I got some new information. Mm. My bad, guys. I was wrong.
So by all means, go ahead.
I don't know if Dominic
I'm listening. I'm all ears. I guess this is one that no one will ever convince me that I am wrong. Okay, fabulous day today. Thank you for getting up with us. UFC action live and in person from Fight Island is coming up right now on ESPN.